for giving me the opportunity to speak with you. This is a concept, One Health, that has been near and dear to my heart now for quite a few years. So I'm just thrilled to be able to speak with you about it. Moved on to the next slide. So you should have our banner on the top. What is One Health? Very simply, the concept that human health is inextricably linked with animal and environmental health, and the goal of One Health is to increase communication and collaboration between health professionals in human, animal, and environmental health. Our website, which I encourage all of you to visit, the onehealthinitiative.com, has been for the past almost 9 years now, serving as a global repository, since 2008, we've been serving as a global repository for all news and information pertaining to One Health. So let's move on to the next slide. Why One Health? Well, we've seen many zoonotic diseases arising from wildlife and as well as livestock and pets over the intervening 50 years. And indeed, over 75% of emerging infectious diseases are zoonotic, diseases of animals that infect humans. And around 60% of human pathogens are zoonotic. In addition, many of the agents of bioterrorism are zoonotic diseases. But beyond just zoonotic diseases, it's important to note that disease processes are shared across species, and I'll speak a little bit about that in a few slides. Next slide. So this concept of One Health, or the idea that human, animal, and environmental health are linked, is not a new concept, and indeed, the linkage between them, one could argue, goes all the way back to the dawn of agriculture about 10,000 years ago. Now, there have been many benefits to agriculture, allowing when we domesticated crops and animals to serve as a stable and steady food supply, allowed civilizations to develop and towns and cities to grow. And in fact, our civilization wouldn't be as we know it if it weren't for agriculture and animal and plant domestication. But if you move to the next slide, we've paid a price with agriculture in that when we did domesticate animals, we domesticated them and they provided us food, but they also transmitted diseases to us. And so, for example, cattle transmitted measles, evidence that pigs transmitted pertussis. We don't know which animal transmitted smallpox, but it almost certainly showed up around the time agriculture started. Goats and sheep provide us with brucellosis and Q fever, and rabbits and squirrels provide us with tularemia. But I also have to say, I don't have a slide for this, but it went both ways. We appear to have transmitted tuberculosis to animals, so it wasn't just a one-way street. There's evidence that tuberculosis was originally a human disease that we transmitted to our cattle. If you move to the next slide, the ancient Greeks recognized that there was a link between human and environmental health, and they recognized that if people went down to low-lying swampy areas, they got sick, and that's how we got the term malaria, bad air in swampy areas. The Romans knew that foul water would make you sick, so they provided a fresh water supply. Of course, the fact that it was tainted with lead was another whole issue, but they had the right idea. Now, if you move on to the next slide, unfortunately, this recognition that human, animal, and environmental health are linked was lost during the Middle Ages, and so you have examples of the Black Plague devastating a third to a half of the European population, spread by the fleas carried by rats. And this was certainly the opposite of One Health, complete devastation of society. Next slide. Beginning in the 18th century, I would argue some of the greatest discoveries in the history of medicine and public health were made at the intersection between human and animal health. And I'll give you the example in the next slide, the vaccination against smallpox. It's a great story with Dr. Edward Jenner, who recognized that milkmaids who came down with cowpox were resistant to smallpox. Vacca is the Latin word for cow, and that's how he developed the term vaccination. But it's important to know the background for his idea. There was a procedure called variolation that was probably developed sometime in ancient times, either in China or India. Nobody really knows for sure. But the practice was you take dried pus from somebody recovering from smallpox, and you scratch it into the arm of a naive individual, usually a child. And it brought the mortality rate down from around 30% to around 1%. Wasn't without its risk, but it was successful enough that it was pretty widely practiced in the Orient. A British diplomat's wife, Lady Barry Montague, recognized this. She had her own children variolated, brought the practice back to England, where it became quite commonplace. And that's what gave Jenner the idea to vaccinate, to use the pus from cowpox rather than smallpox. And that was essentially the basis for the smallpox vaccine that was used to eradicate the disease a couple centuries later. Next slide. Unfortunately, as with all good things, opposition to vaccination developed very rapidly. Almost as soon as Edward Jenner self-published his paper, there was criticisms to vaccination, and you can see on this cartoon, little cow heads are popping out of people's bodies in opposition that we should take in the substances of God's lower creatures, never mind the fact that they had no problem eating God's lower creatures or drinking the milk from God's lower creatures, but if it's scratched in their skin, then this will happen. So go figure. Next slide. And in the 19th century, you had Louis Pasteur, the French chemist, studied chicken cholera and developed his idea on, understood how smallpox vaccination worked through his studies with chicken cholera. Robert Cook studied anthrax and helped develop the germ theory of disease. So between these two scientists, they were studying animal diseases, but then applied them to human health. Next slide, the additional 19th century developments. Rudolf Virchow, a German physician and pathologist, said, between animal and human medicine, there are no dividing lines, nor should there be, and he coined the term zoonosis. He's the father of pathology and studied animal tissues under the microscope. And if you go down to the next slide, he studied the life cycles of Trichinella spiralis and porcine muscular tissue and cysticercosis and tuberculosis in cattle. Now, interestingly enough, his father was a butcher, which might have influenced his interest. But in response to his studies, he advocated for meat inspection programs by veterinarians to do pathologic study of tissues to make sure that they were healthy. And that advocacy, that program was eventually adopted in the U.S. and is still in place today. Next slide. Sir William Osler, considered the father of modern medicine, went to Berlin to study under Virchow, recognized the importance of pathology, returned to Canada and established veterinary pathology as an academic discipline in North America. So there was quite a bit of collaboration in these early stages of medicine and veterinary medicine, where they worked together quite extensively and studied disease processes in animals and then applied them to human health. Next slide. In the 19th century, one of the key discoveries made by a physician-veterinarian team was that diseases could be transmitted by arthropods, In this case, Dr. Theobald Smith, a physician whose picture is here, and F.L. Kilborn, a veterinarian, discovered that the cause of cattle fever was transmitted by a tick. The agent was Babesia bigemina. And this monumental discovery set the stage for Walter Reed and his colleagues to discover that mosquitoes transmit yellow fever, and the rest is history in terms of recognizing many diseases that are transmitted by arthropods. Next slide. But for better or worse, the 20th century saw an explosion of medical knowledge. Medicine became increasingly specialized, and sadly, medicine and veterinary medicine went their separate ways to the point where there's very little communication or collaboration between the two. But yet, the challenges of the 20th and 21st century demanded that they revisit each other. You can go to the next slide, emergence of new infectious diseases. You can see that there are emergence of diseases, many of them zoonotic, all around the world, and yet the focus has been solely on humans rather than on the animal health as well. Next slide. So why are these diseases emerging? Well, many reasons, increasing global population pressures for one, and in our quest for our needs for more food and agriculture. We have no problem doing more environmental destruction and deforestation for intensive agriculture or for development, destroying and displacing wildlife and their habitats. And so we have more connection, more contact with them, increasing our risk for disease transmission, certainly global trade and travel, and possibly global climate change as well has an influence. Next slide. There are risks to pet ownership. Pets are very important for people. The importance of the human-animal bond cannot be underestimated, but at the same time, this one study by Elizabeth Scott published in the American Journal of Infection Control. She swabbed household services, household surfaces and randomly selected address, found that nearly half of them had methicillin-resistant Staph aureus on their surfaces, and found that cat owners were 8 times more likely to have MRSA in their home than others. So there's no question that animals are important, but there's also evidence that the microbes jump from human to animal and back again. So we need to recognize when we're dealing with infectious diseases that there's a whole ecology out there beyond just the clinic and hospital walls that we need to be aware of and address if we're to adequately deal with them. Next slide. But I want to also point out that One Health is more than just diseases that in the store of a cardiologist at UCLA. She was doing echocardiograms on tamarin monkeys, and this was a number of years ago, and the veterinarian in charge cautioned her not to stare in the monkey's eyes because from the monkey's point of view, the monkey would think that she'd want to eat it. And there's an entity that the veterinarians recognized back in 1974 called capture myopathy, where the animal, the wild animal is so stressed upon capture that it goes into heart failure and dies. Well, Dr. Horowitz was absolutely shocked to hear this because not that long before, there was a new human disease entity called Takotsubo cardiomyopathy that the Japanese described in a journal. And it turns out that the human would undergo such extreme stress from either a death of a loved one or something else that they would go into heart failure and die. It's the same physiologic process as capture myopathy, but the veterinarians discovered it 30 years earlier, but nobody spoke with them. And that started her looking into a number of disease processes that are shared across species between animals and humans, and prompted her to write this book, Zubiquity, that she published last year. Next slide. So the challenges of the 21st century are many. I would argue that to adequately address them, we need to embrace a new paradigm, a One Health paradigm that recognizes this overlapping nature between human, animal, and environmental health, that they are indeed linked, and that to address them, we need to recognize the bigger picture rather than just focusing on humans. Everything from zoonotic diseases to cancer, cardiovascular diseases, all these diseases are shared, or there's some element of them in animals. Zoonotic diseases certainly come from animals, either wildlife, livestock, or pets, and that in order to adequately address them, we need to work in a collaborative effort with those in veterinary medicine and maybe even ecology. Next slide. I'd like to shift gears a little bit and just mention some of the One Health resources that are available online for those who are interested. There's a number of One Health information websites beyond just ours, One Health Initiative website. There's a few academic interdisciplinary journals and some One Health outreach efforts. If you go to the next slide, I have a whole list here of One Health websites, including there's a One Health Commission that's separate from us. There's a CDC One Health website, the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, the American Veterinary Medical Association, and on down the line, many One Health online websites. Next slide. There are some academic interdisciplinary journals, Nature and Science among them, although they address all of science, not just public health. There's the CDC Emerging Infectious Disease Journal that certainly covers zoonotic diseases. There's Echo Health, and there's the Swedish journal Infection, Ecology, and Epidemiology. I tried to get a One Health journal. I tried to get funding for it, but no foundation was interested in it, and I had to scrap it. But I would argue that there is a role for a One Health journal, but right now, that doesn't seem to be the right time to start it. There's just no funding for it. There's other One Health outreach efforts. If you go down to the next slide, the Department of Health in Florida has put out a One Health newsletter for a while. There's One Health Talk that people can participate in. There's a One Health Academy that's held in Washington, D.C. There's been One Health Congresses. The first one met in Melbourne, Australia in 2011, and most recently Bangkok, Thailand in 2013. I believe the next one is being planned is for the Netherlands. I believe that's in 2015. Next slide. So how can physicians engage in One Health? Well, I think it's great that there's some movement to develop a collegial relationship with the American Association of Public Health Veterinarians. They certainly seems to have a similar mission and interest, which I think would be mutually beneficial. My hope is that people will educate colleagues and students about this so it will develop legs and grow. Develop and promote interdisciplinary One Health information and resources, interdisciplinary One Health clinical and research efforts, and certainly continue One Health sessions like this one, and hopefully this will be the first of many. So my take-home messages, next slide, that human, animal, environmental health are linked, that if we're interested in global health, you need to look at it from a One Health perspective. One Health provides an important strategy to improve the lives of all species on the planet. And if you've got healthy animals, you've got healthy people. This is a growing movement, but it certainly needs cultivation and support. There are many online resources, but unfortunately, there's not much funding. And that physicians should develop collegial relationships with veterinarians. And I would argue that public health can play a key role in advancing One Health. Next slide. There's many endorsements for One Health, and I'm happy to say that the American Association of Public Health Physicians is another one, although I haven't listed them here, recently endorsed the concept. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues and collaborators, Dr. Bruce Kaplan, veterinarian, Tom Monath, physician, Jack Woodall, research scientist, Lisa Conte, veterinarian. Again, our website, and I'd like to thank you for your time and attention. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.